Everyone, welcome to the Villa Together podcast with myself, Chris Ellis and Ian Gillett. And today we're joined by a very, very special guest, which is ex-Aston Villa defender Simon Grayson. Simon, how are we doing?
All good, thank you. Yourselves?
Yeah, very good, thanks.
Really good, thanks, Simon.
I'm sure you'll be very happy at the moment after the recent result.
Yeah, we're riding on the crest of a wave at the moment. Hopefully the momentum can continue. We said it's a bit of a sad state that we've had to go into the international break and have this 2 weeks now. But the one thing that we can have on our faces for the next 2 weeks is a smile. So that nothing's bringing that after the result against Liverpool.
Extended period of time to enjoy the moment, isn't it, still? It's a fantastic exactly. Result. Go.
Yeah, ridiculous. Ridiculous. So, Simon, we'll start with your time at Aston Villa. Obviously, being an Aston Villa podcast, so you moved to us after you'd had a decent spell at Leicester City. I think just under 200 appearances there. You won the League Cup. So, kind of going off the back of a successful stint with Leicester to then going to Aston Villa, what were your kind of your thoughts and your feelings about kind of making that move?
Well, it was strange how it all came about, really, because Brian Little had signed me for Leicester in the first place in 92 when I was a 21-year-old from Leeds and had a spell of time there with Brian, which I really enjoyed, to the point of being the first Leicester captain to lift a trophy at Wembley when we won a playoff against Derby. So great affection with Brian and what he taught me and him as a person. And then Martin O'Neill was the next manager, really, after Matt McGee was there for about a year or so, that Martin came in. And Martin, as you'll know, being Villa fans, is sort of very much off the cuff and does things in a different way. Huge amount of respect for him because he got us promoted and then we won the League Cup. And it was coming to the end of sort of the League Cup run, really, that I was out of contract and Martin was quite forgetful at times that he'd organised a meeting with my agent to organise a new deal and he'd forget to turn up to it. And it just got to a point where Mike said, look, let's get the League Cup run out of the way and let's finish the season and then we can do what you want to do in the summer in terms of new deals, etc. Because I didn't want to leave because I'd been at Leicester for 6 years. It was a great place. We just won the League Cup to mean qualifying for Europe as well. And I'd been sort of captain quite a lot and I had opportunities to leave, but over that summer, I got a call via, I think it was Brian Little's cleaner, to say, would you fancy going to Aston Villa and working with Brian again? Because, like, not an illegal approach, but it was because I was coming out of contract anyway, but it was more of rather than Brian ring me, got somebody else to do it. And it was just one of them that I looked at it, the situation, and Villa then were a top four club, weren't they? I think it was Villa were the equivalent of what we just said, probably Chelsea, Tottenham, really, these days. A real qualified for Europe, spending a lot of money. Brian, obviously, was a manager again who worked so closely with. And I wouldn't have left to go to any other club apart from Aston Villa because of the size of the club. And when I played against them, I loved playing at Villa Park. And Villa Park was just this fantastic ground, wasn't it? That growing up as a kid, the FA Cup semi-finals were hosted there, to them playing there for Leicester. And qualifying for Europe as well was a massive sort of reason for going as well. And I think I signed same day as Stan Collymore. He cost about £5-6 million more than I did. But and I always remember ringing Martin up and telling him that I was going to go to Aston Villa. And I rang him up and his secretary said he's on another call at the moment, but basically his message to you is to basically go F yourself and do one. Yeah. It was like tongue in cheek, but he didn't take any responsibility for getting meetings and get tied me down to a longer term contract. And even when I left, there was spells when I was at Aston Villa still that he wanted to sign me back. So he didn't hold it against me for too long, but he did hold a grudge for a period of time, that's for sure.
That's amazing. Talking about your sort of start at Villa in joining after the sort of the summer of 97, and then we had a particularly bad start to that season. I think we lost the first four Premier League games. And I think the first one was against Leicester, wasn't it? Was it a 1-0 loss to Leicester?
Well, it's uncanny, isn't it? Because I've made the move and then the fixtures come out and it's away at Leicester. And I'm thinking, oh, brilliant. Here we go. What, if there's one place you don't really want to go back, it's somewhere where you've just left, but with such great fond memories. And I think I was subbed, to be fair, so I can't take too much of the credit for the defeat. So, but I remember getting a bit of stick on the touchline. And it was always weird playing against the Leicester lads that season. I remember playing at Villa Park against them, and Marshy and Steve Walsh were kicking lumps out of me, and I was kicking lumps out of them. And then we'd gone for a pint in Leicester afterwards type thing. But it wasn't a great start to sort of the season, because, you know, it's like when you start a season, you want to start in a positive manner as a football club, but as an individual, you want to try and make a statement early on. It was always one of them that going to Aston Villa, I knew I was never going to be the regular playing 50, 60 games like I'd done the previous season, because of the reasons I said before was that Villa were a top four club and we had a good squad and probably the strangest part of actually signing was that for the 2 years under Martin O'Neill, I was playing right back, stroke wing back. But when I played at Leicester under Brian, I played at centre midfield or centre back. And that's where he went and used me for all my career at Villa. I never played right back, to be fair. We had Gary Charles and then Fernando Nelson came in. So the position that had got me a real good season the previous couple, Brian knew I could play and be versatile to play in different positions. But it wasn't the start that everybody wanted, that's for sure.
Delving into that season a little bit more, and I think Chris is going to come on to it a bit and talking about some of your memories from that season with regards to Europe. Obviously, we had the bad start and then we never really got started, did we? And it was a bit inconsistent. We were picking up a win, then a loss and a draw, etc. And then it culminated in Brian leaving and John Gregory coming in. What were your thoughts at the time, and especially the players? Because I remember at the time, I was probably about 9 years old. And I remember talking to my dad about the next Aston Villa manager. And we were in a situation at the time where, obviously, we loved Brian Little as a player. He did great things at Villa and he's a hero, still is to this day. Yeah. And then him leaving, and we were like, well, what happens now? And I think there was people like Terry Venables and linked. What were your thoughts as players? Like, what were your thoughts and feelings around the appointment of Gregory?
Well, I think at first we were all disappointed that Brian had left, because he'd signed a lot of us from people like Matt Draper, Gary Charles, Tommy Johnson. I think Tommy had left by then, actually. And then Stan and lots of other lads that were there. Julian Joachim was another close one, a friend of mine. And it's obviously disappointing when a manager loses his job so early. Look, I've been on the other side of it, so I know what it's like. And it was a surprise, because I keep saying Villa were a top four club the previous season and you'd have expected a real big name. And John was somebody I worked with Brian at Leicester anyway, so I knew exactly what he was like and what he was going to do. Wasn't sure about him being the manager at the time, but he had a personality. He certainly backed himself. He was confident. He was a good coaching style, good man manager. And he sort of trusted his ability. So it was one out of the blue a little bit, but I think that's what Doug Ellis used to do, just throw a few spanners in the work, didn't he? Yeah, I think Doug would have probably appointed himself if he had a chance as well, but yeah, I don't think at that time it was the thing to do.
Deadly Doug, yeah. So obviously, you talk about a few of those players that you've played with. There was a time, obviously going back, over the years in the Premier League, it was almost unprecedented, especially recently, where you were part of a side that was an all-English team in the Premier League. And obviously, there was quite a few. You look at the players that you played with. Obviously, you mentioned Stan Collymore. Gareth Barry was there at a young age. Lee Hendry, Julian Joachim, Gareth Southgate, Ian Taylor. What was it like playing with some of those players? Because obviously, a lot of them, you know, they're very well known. What about the kind of characters in the dressing room as well? Because I suppose the likes of Lee Hendry, Paul Merson, Stan Collymore, they are renowned for their kind of, I don't want to say off-field antics, but also, you know, not just stuff happening on the pitch, if you know what I mean?
Yeah, look, I think back in the 90s, it was very much the norm at every club that we'd socialise together. And there was a good spirit about us. There was a good hardcore of lads that sort of liked to go out, but also would train really hard as well. And it wasn't as, and we had that at Leicester as well. And we had some players that were daft as a brush. Mark Draper is probably up there with the daftest player that you've ever sort of worked with and played with. You had Gareth coming through as a 17-year-old and thinking, who's this young whippersnapper taking my place in the team? And then he goes on to have the career, so I had no complaints in taking my place in the team at the time. And Lee was obviously a fantastic talent. But I think we were a good group that we all got on with each other. And you had like different characters. Hugo would come into the dressing, bless him, with his financial times and would get plenty of stick because underneath he'd probably have the sun. He was trying to be this educated footballer, which we all knew that he was quite educated, but he was also playing along with it as well. God rest his soul.
Yeah, amazing. Just thinking, you know, some of those players. I mean, obviously Lee Hendry's, you know, quite, you know, he's a pundit. He's on a lot of things now. But I mean, obviously growing up, he came through and he was, like you say, up and coming, very talented guy. What about playing in Europe? Because obviously, like you say, Villa the previous season had done quite well. So yourself managing to play in the UEFA Cup as it was then. You know, what was the experience like playing in Europe with those kind of guys?
Well, it was fantastic because it was the first time I'd actually played in Europe as well. So it was new to me and we had some decent ties. We went to Bordeaux. The one thing about Bordeaux, I remember, was being sick in the warm-up and being sick on the pitch and having to come off at half-time. So that wasn't a great memory of playing against, I think it was Papin was playing that day, Jean-Pierre Papin, being sick as well. But I think some of the like stories that you remember back to the playing days in Europe were not necessarily the games, because we'd go to Romania and you'd see a training pitch, you'd see the hotel, and then you'd go and play the games and you'd fly straight back after the games. And we had obviously a fantastic run. But I always remember sort of the best memories with Steve Harrison when we were preparing on the morning of the game. He'd come down with a bag of balls wrapped around his shoulder, meeting at a certain time in reception. So we were always there waiting for Harry to come down. And as you know, he was a joker of the highest order. And he would deliberately just leave the ball bag open. And then he would fall down the stairs and all the balls would fall into reception, right? And this one day, Doug Ellis was there and he'd run across to Steve to pick him up because he'd rolled down the stairs. Balls are flying across reception everywhere. And all of a sudden, like, Doug is going across to see if he's all right. And he said, yeah, dusting himself down, Harry. He said, yeah, I'm all right, Chairman. I'll be there. I'll be able to take training. Don't worry about it. So we're all like pissing ourselves because it's like hilarious seeing somebody deliberately fall down the stairs. We didn't realise at the time it was deliberately, but we just thought, this is brilliant. So then I remember the next time we went, I don't know where we were going to, we might have been into Norway or somewhere like that. And Harry did exactly the same thing the morning of the game. And Doug Ellis is there again. And Doug shouted across, get up, you stupid fool. You did me last time, but I'm not picking you up this time. It didn't quite have the same effect on Doug Ellis as it did the first time he did it. But Harry was brilliant at doing them things. And we had a great run in Europe, didn't we? I think, was it a quarter final that we got to and played against some good players, Celta Vigo, Atletico, I think Bilbao. So it was fantastic to be part of that that group that really, nearly did something. We're never going to emulate the team that obviously that went on to win the European Cup many years before us, but at least we had a decent go at it.
Yeah, talking about that European quarterfinal against Atletico Madrid, just tell us about that night at Villa Park, because when Colly Moore scores that second goal to make it 2-2, but obviously Madrid still had the away goals rolling on their side, the roof nearly lifted off the whole tent. How was it as a player? Because you played in the away leg, didn't you? But were you a sub in the
Probably a sub in the second leg, yeah. Like any big grounds, Villa Park, when it is at its best and the atmosphere is on a knife edge and it's a big under the lights and it's a big gate and it's a big game, it's one of the best stadiums to go and play in, because it is still one of those stadiums that is still quite on top of you as a player, and to have the whole end trying to drag the ball into the back of the net for you throughout that period. Yeah, it was just disappointing that we just couldn't quite get the next goal to get us through to the semi-final. And they had some decent players playing in that team. I think Kiko might have played in that game, I think, or was he maybe at Bilbao? I remember playing against him, and all of a sudden we were in the playing 10, 15 minutes, and all of a sudden we could keep hearing is this whistling. He didn't shout for the ball, he was whistling all the time, and we were just like, you know, there's a whistling left, right, and centre, and we wondered, and anyway, we got used to it. But sorry, went away from the story of that particular night. But it was Villa Park was rocking, and it's just a shame that we couldn't get the next goal to take us to the semi-final.
What about any other kind of memories that stand out from your time being at Aston Villa?
I remember it was like, remember the Tottenham game on Boxing Day? There was always great games to play. We played them on tea time on Sky, and I managed to set up one of the goals at least. Remember playing against Leeds, and it was funny because obviously I'm a Leeds supporter, so it was always strange playing against a team that you support. And I remember on the Thursday night, there was no rules back then that you weren't allowed out, but I drove up to Leeds to go and watch U2 play at the concert around Deer Park. And got back to Leicester, where I was still living, I don't know, 1-2 o'clock in the morning, thinking, well, I'm going to be tired for the weekend. And as it turned out, it's probably one of the best games I remember playing myself for Villa at that particular time. So should have tried it a little bit more often going to gigs. But it was, every time you walked out to Villa Park, it was a special moment. And it could be tough at times when, like every club, the expectancy levels are high. And if you don't perform, then you deserve to be criticised, but at that spell, there was a group that was trying the best to be as good as we could be.
Amazing.
That's brilliant. In terms of when it came to leave Villa, you then moved to Blackburn. Just tell us about that, because you played under quite a few managers there as well before going out on a couple of loans, didn't you?
Yeah, what happened is I just had my son born in the March, and I think I got injured, did my knee, and was out for a few weeks. And really, that second season didn't play too often. I think Steve Watson came in as well as a right back, and Gareth was playing regularly in midfield. So I was in around the team as well, but it just come to a point where I thought I wanted to go and play regular first team football. And as I said, my son had just been born, and the Blackburn situation came up, and they'd just been relegated to the Championship. And it was an opportunity to move back closer to the families with my newborn son. So Brian Kidd was the manager, and unfortunately we didn't have a great start there as well, because he ended up losing his job within probably 3, 4, 5 months of the season as well. And then Graeme Souness came in, who had his own ideas, as you do as a manager, but he had this theory that if he didn't like you, you got put into a bomb squad. And there was some decent players in our bomb squad. We had people like Egil Ostenstad, Billy McKinley, Christian Daly, Ashley Ward, Nathan Blake, Lee Carsley was in there a little bit. So sometimes we do a practice match and our team was actually better than the first team. But it's just part and parcel, and the reason why you're in football is to play. So I ended up sort of having 2 years left on my contract and wanted to play first team football. And if it was something that I learned that I've taken into my managing career, that try and be as honest with players as possible, as much as you can be, because it wasn't until I left Blackburn I found out that if I'd played one more game for Blackburn, they owed Villa another £250,000 on the transfer fee. Well, if somebody had told me that while I was being sort of not playing, then I would have understood it a little bit more, because I was a good pro, I trained hard, whether I was in the team or not. But then to be told that was a reason, coupled with maybe Graham didn't fancy me or whatever, but it would have made it a little bit easier to accept. And it was something I took into my managing career, that I wanted to make sure that I was honest, as open as to the players, regardless if they liked it or not, because you can have no comebacks then.
Yeah, I mean, you've mentioned your managerial career then, obviously. You're at Blackburn, you had a number of loan spells, you went to Blackpool, and then you became caretaker manager and your player manager. And then obviously becoming manager of Blackpool, what was the kind of the transition like from player to manager whilst at Blackpool? Because obviously it's kind of, it all came as one, being player, manager and caretaker.
Yeah, it was one of them that I was doing my badges as I was going along, from probably when I was 32-ish. As you do, you start getting towards the back end and you want to wonder what you're going to do. So I started doing my badges, playing in the first team, taking the odd session. And then Steve McMahon got sacked and I took over the last game of the season. And I enjoyed it, to be fair. I think we lost at Bristol City. And then Colin Hendry got the job, and then probably, I don't know, however long Colin lasted, I was then made player coach of the reserves. So I'd play on a Saturday, play on a Tuesday. I remember playing on a Tuesday night in Bournemouth away and getting home at 5 o'clock in the morning back to Blackpool, and then driving back into the ground at probably 11 o'clock to pick up the kit and take the reserves that afternoon or something like that. So I was certainly did my groundwork of where I was going. And then my natural progression was going to be reserve team coach, then could have been somebody's assistant, stroke first team coach. And I got the opportunity to go with somebody, and I went to Colin Hendry, said, can I take this opportunity? And he said, yeah, no worries, you're 35 now. He said, you need to go and see Carl Oyston, the owner there. So I went to see him and I explained what I wanted to do. And he just said, look, no, you're not going. I went to my amazement. I'm thinking, look, I've been here 3 years. I've played over 100 games, been a good servant, done the reserves. I says, what's the reason? He says, well, I'm sacking Colin and you're taking over as caretaker. So I sort of fell into it, really, as in taking the first team on that caretaker basis. And everybody asked me about this. How easy was it to do the transition from suddenly being a player to being the manager, dropping people, making key decisions? And I basically went with the theory that I've got to be ruthless or if I want to succeed. So if it means leaving out one of my best mates in the dressing room, I have to do it because this is what I want to do for the next period of my time and see how successful I'm going to be with it all. So, yeah, I made some key decisions. I remember one of my teammates who was good friends with, I released him that following season, that summer, and he said, you'll never find a better centre-back than me. I said, look, that's your opinion, but I'm going to make decisions that I think is going to work for me in the long term. And I remember seeing him a couple of years later, and I said to him, remember that comment that you made about you won't get a better centre-half? He went, yeah. I said, look, just to correct you, I found two better centre-backs than just you. So it was just one of them processes where it just sort of, I knew the club, fell into the job, but really wanted to make a go of it and it fell into it and we got a promotion off the back of it.
Amazing.
I mean, that early start, your managerial career, you really sort of, your stock was going up and up at the time, wasn't it? You got Blackpool promoted via the playoffs and then joining Leeds. Just tell us about that move to obviously the team you support, your beloved Leeds. Just tell us a bit more about that and how it came about.
Yeah, I spoke to a few other clubs in that period of time, as you said, about jobs, and the ones that I got approached about were not ones that I really fancied doing. And then Gary McAllister left on the Sunday dinner time and I got a call the afternoon and would I be interested in going? I think before the person who had asked me, I was in my car ready to drive over because as a supporter and played a few games in the first team and then to go back as manager, it's just something that you never think is going to happen to you. And then I went into Blackpool the next day to see Carl Oyston and he knew that there'd been an approach. And we actually had a signing session that day in one of the lounges for all the kids because it was just before Christmas. So I'm signing all these with all the players, all the autographs and pictures and that. And all of a sudden there's about 8-10 TVs in this lounge we're in and it comes up breaking news on Sky. Leeds make approach for Simon Grayson as I've got all these Blackpool supporters, all my players around me, and I'm thinking, this isn't good timing that I need to see that come up or something like that.
I don't need this right now.
Yeah. Anyway, long story short, and I had to resign because they wouldn't let Leeds, they didn't accept the approach. I had to resign and went over the next day. And to be fair, Ken Bates was the owner at Leeds and he said, look, whatever's thrown at you, any sort of repercussions from lawyers or etc. we'll look after because we want you to be your manager. And so it all happened quickly, and especially over Christmas, you're just preparing for the games and then all of a sudden you're going to Leeds and you've got your play. Ironic again, I think I went on the 23rd, trained 24th Christmas Day, and then my first game as Leeds manager was at home to Leicester. So again, you talk about sort of Leicester's played a big part in my life and career, and we drew that game, and it was so surreal that you're walking out to Marching On Together, song that you'd sung as a supporter, following in the footsteps of Don Revie, Howard Wilkinson, Billy Bremner and people like that. And it was just surreal, to be fair.
That sort of first stages at Leeds, you ended the season really well, didn't you? And you had, was it an 11 game winning run at home?
Yeah, I think we beat Don Revie, one of Don Revie's records, to be fair. And we lost in the playoff semi-final against Millwall. And what we did really, and it plays a massive part, that such big clubs, you have to have a connection with your supporters. And there'd been a bit of negativity around the place, but we sort of managed to galvanise the city and the club and the supporters again. And we were on this real ride of thinking we could really achieve something. And it's a bit like Dean at Villa at the moment, when you've got somebody in charge that supports your club, who understands it a little bit more, understands what the supporters, what it means to them, then you get it going in one direction, then it can certainly help you.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's the comparisons can be made with Villa, like you said, with Dean at the moment, and obviously having Jack as a Villa fan as captain as well.
Definitely.
They understand their club, they understand the fans, and everybody's on board, everybody's getting behind the whole project, which is the same comparison we can make.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong, you're not making decisions based on your heart, you're making decisions through your professionalism, no matter what club you're managing, but you do feel defeat a little bit more than you do when you're at other clubs, and maybe you feel it more when you win the big games, like with promotions and winning at Old Trafford, and all other last-minute winners, you feel it as a supporter as well as a manager.
Yeah, definitely. And one thing that Dean Smith always says is never get too low with your defeats and never get too high with your victories. And that can be said now after the win against sort of Liverpool 7-2, not trying to sort of get over the top with it and being realistic. And we need to settle down and know that we've got to work hard to get the points in the next game against Leicester.
Yeah, look, I've used that philosophy right the way through my managerial career as well, that sort of don't get too carried away, but don't get too down, because you can affect something in the next game, whether you've had a bad defeat. So, yeah, I'm certainly along them traits of Dean as well, that don't get too high, but don't get too low as well.
So, Simon, in your second season at Leeds, you managed to get them promoted. Just tell me about the reaction to you from the Leeds supporters when you sort of finally got them on their way back to where they are now, back into the Championship, and the momentum you had from that sort of December in your first season, building on that and then getting them promoted the second season.
Yeah, well, we nearly blew it, because we'd had the second season in charge, that we went with top at Christmas, and then we beat Man United in the FA Cup at Old Trafford, being a League One club, and they were the reigning Premier League champions, so it was all going so well. And then sort of it fell off the rails a little bit, that we've lost a couple of games, and then gets to the back end of the season and it gets a little bit anxious. And basically what was quite comfortable at a certain stage was that going down to the last game of the season, that we needed to win to get automatic promotion by playing Bristol Rovers, and 38,000 there, and it was rocking. And you're thinking, right, we only need to win, great opportunity, and we're back in the Championship anyway. Remember, Max Gradle got sent off 5 minutes before half-time. Just after half-time, we go 1-0 down, and they're thinking, flipping it. We might not even get off this pitch, never mind any of the Bristol Rovers players, because of the disappointment of not winning this game. And just going back to the half-time, I always remember, and I've said this to some of the, look like a few Leeds supporters, that when we were walking off, the lad that Max was involved with was stood walking down the tunnel next to me. And for whatever reason, I just said to him, look, just remember where you're playing second. Not that the lad had done anything wrong. He was involved in a scuffle, but Max deserved to get sent off. I just said, remember where you're playing second half. He says, what do you mean? I says, well, you're playing in the northeast corner of Elland Road, and that is the furthest point away from the tunnel. So if we lose this game, you will be the villain and all the best getting off this pitch in front of the Kop End and everybody that could be running on. Anyway, as I said, we go 1-0 down. 10 men, 1-0 down, and then make a couple of substitutions anyway. We win the game 2-1. But 30 seconds from the end of the game, who stood playing right wing, right in front of the tunnel area, is the lad that's supposed to be playing left back in front of the cop and everything. So even though we were going to win the game, he'd heeded the warning and got sort of right next to the tunnel and darted down. And it was just one of them moments of relief, really, obviously, that you could, even now I can still picture seeing grown men on the turf kissing it and just crying because of the number of years had been in League One, the disappointing era that he'd been through, and back in the Championship, and hopefully ready to really kick on to eventually get back to the Premier League.
Tell us about the party and your memories from that evening about after promotion. Were there any stories to tell? Was there any nice bonuses from the chairman?
We went to Dubai, to be fair, for a lad's trip for 4 or 5 days, which was nice. As you imagine, there was plenty of champagne being drunk after the dressing rooms, and it was just one of them. I think the lads went into town and enjoyed all the accolades. I was a little bit more in a quieter restaurant, but still having a good time and enjoyed the night as well. So yeah, you have to celebrate the good moments because it's part and parcel of it all. And unfortunately, back then as well, what we're talking now, 2010, 10 years ago, mobile phones weren't sort of around as frequently as they are now. So players could have a good time, have a good drink and enjoy themselves, where now everybody has to just do one thing and the whole world sees it, doesn't it? So it was a great achievement. Yeah. And we were looking forward to the Championship and see if we could get to somewhere near the top six.
Brilliant. And sort of that next season in the Championship, I think it'll be remembered for the FA Cup more so, with your win against Man United. Was it the first time since 81
that you'd won? Well, the first it was the year when we were in League One, to be fair, that we got promoted and played Man United. Yeah, so when we went into the Championship, we played Tottenham. I think we played Arsenal in the FA Cup as well. But the big one was when we were in League One, yeah, the previous season. So to be a League One club, to beat Man United, who were the Premier League champions at the time, it was a fantastic season for us. So, and people say, which was my best game, did I enjoy more, so the promotion or the win at Old Trafford? And it has to be the promotion, because you work so hard for all season to get promotion. The cup games are a bonus. And I always remember sort of seeing Sir Alex in his office afterwards, and he was very sort of humble, because he hated losing, and he certainly hated losing to Leeds, and he would have hated losing to a League One club. And he said we deserved it, which was great. And he said to me, look, do you ken what pressure is, in his strong Scottish accent? And I said, what do you mean? He says, well, do you understand what pressure is now? And I said, well, look, pressure is being a manager and getting results for big clubs. He said, no, pressure is you lot to get promoted, because I've got, I don't know how much, X amount of money on you to get promoted. If you don't, then you'll be getting a boot up your ass from me. So so my response was, well, let me go win Berbatov and Rooney and I might be able to secure your bet. Yeah.
Fantastic.
Sir Alex at his best.
Yeah.
I think it was your first season in the Championship with Leeds, and you finished seventh. And then obviously the following year didn't go too well, and you ended up going to Huddersfield. What was it like, kind of the emotion and everything, not just leaving, losing your job with Leeds, but also being a Leeds fan and leaving your managerial job at Leeds?
Well, it was weird, because in that first season in the Championship, we were second at Christmas, and we had a real good squad. We had Snodgrass, we had Max Gradle, Becchio, Howson, Bradley Johnson. We had a real good team, Kasper Schmeichel. And then around Christmas, I wanted to sign a centre-back, and they wouldn't allow me. I'm not talking millions. It was like 400 or 500 grand, and they didn't allow me to do it because we were conceding probably too many goals and just slipped out of the playoffs, when really we should have qualified for the playoffs, and it would have helped if we'd had a centre-back. And then it just started to fall away a little bit. They sort of started selling players. Johnny Alston went to Norwich. Max Gradle went to St Etienne, I think. And it was just then sort of the negativity was coming from the supporters to Ken Bates, and it just wasn't the same club that we'd really felt this connection to again. And then we lost to Birmingham and Zidic got a trick. And I don't think he scored three goals in his career, but he scored three that night and ended up getting me the sack. And I said that when I left as a young pro at 21, I left with a tear in my eye, and I left with a tear in my eye as a manager as well, because it means so much to me, that football club. But I was immensely proud of what I'd done, the 3.5 years that I'd been there, the promotions, what I'd given the supporters, and obviously disappointed. But before I know it, I'm back in work 2 weeks later and go to Huddersfield, and I managed to get them promoted again.
Because I think I remember at the time, obviously Lee Clark had been the manager there, and then they'd been relatively successful. They'd been a decent side without getting promotion to the Championship, and then you come along and you get promotion to the Championship. What was that like in terms of, you know, obviously you got the promotion with Blackpool, you'd had the promotion with Leeds, then you got the promotion with Huddersfield. It was kind of becoming your forte, so to speak, getting teams into the Championship from League One.
Well, it was probably the most dour promotion that I'd got out of the three so far, because we played Sheffield United in the playoff final at Wembley, and there was nothing in the game, and 0-0 the day before. And the senior lads, or the more experienced players, were putting them in the bottom corners. The lads that didn't want to take them were shanking them over the bar. Anyway, we come to take the penalties, but we missed our first three. And my first three most experienced players missed the target, had the saved or hit the post. They missed a couple, did Sheffield United. But I'm thinking, there's no way that we can win this penalty shootout by, missing the first three penalties anyway, into the lads that didn't really want to take them. So all of a sudden, these lads that were shanking them and putting them over the bar and into the river where we trained the day before, were putting them in the top corner. They were sending the keepers the wrong way, and it was like unbelievable set of penalties. So it got down to Alex Smithies had to take one for us, and he put it in the top corner, and it was down to Steve Simonson, Sheffield United goalkeeper, to hit his, and fortunately he blazed it over the bar and straight into the Huddersfield supporters. And the ironicness of that was that that summer, when we were doing all our recruitment, an agent rang me and said, would you like to sign Steve Simonson, the Sheffield United goalkeeper? I went, not a chance. Imagine the conspiracy theories that he's missed this penalty deliberately and I've signed him. So, not a chance. So that was a dour, but an exciting way to win it as well, because you're going through all sorts of emotions of a penalty shootout where the goalkeeper wins it for you.
Then obviously, You had after your spell with Huddersfield, you went to Preston, and again another promotion. And looking at looking at Preston now, they're an established Championship side, and I think the foundations were built by yourself. In all fairness, as you look at the players that kind of came in, Callum Robinson, I think you brought in Callum Robinson there, Daniel Johnson, you know, some good players that came in, good recruitment. Some good young players, and they are Preston, or a good, solid Championship side that they've been kind of on the fringes or just outside the playoffs. What about that move as well? And you kind of time with Preston, because it seemed like that was a quite an exciting role and a kind of challenging one as well.
Yeah, it was brilliant. I loved my time there. It was again, it was 2 weeks after I left Huddersfield, and I'm thinking, God, I could do with a bit of time out. And I went to Dubai and got a call from Peter Ridsdale, who I knew from Leeds when I was a young pro there. And I said, look, I'm finishing my holiday, but I'll make a decision when I come back anyway. They were in the bottom six of League One at the time, and I felt that it was too good a club and tradition and the history, and they were certainly underachieving, and took the job. First full season, we got into the playoff semi-final and lost out. Following season, got promoted at Wembley. Probably one of the most one-sided defeats Swindon have ever had in terms of possession. They had 67% possession and we beat them 4-0. So that tells you something about what stats can be misleading with. But we knew how they're going to play. But then we went into the Championship and we had like a budget that was in the bottom three, but we finished 11th twice. Our recruitment was very good. As you said, Callum came for a couple of hundred grand and DJ was 50 grand. Then we bought people like Jordan Hugel was 20 grand and sold him. Well, I didn't sell him, but he went for 9 million a few years later. Barkers, and we had a real good transfer policy where we'd bring in younger players, we'd coach them, we'd make, hopefully make them better. And I had many opportunities to leave Preston in the Championship. I had a chance to go back to Leeds under Cellino, but I just didn't think it was right. The club, it was, the Leeds wasn't the club that I knew at the time. And Preston, we were on the up, and it was, I had no intention of leaving until the opportunity came to go to Sunderland, which had just been relegated from the Premier League. And you sometimes you do things and you think, well, if I don't take this opportunity and Sunderland get promoted back to the Premier League, I'm going to miss out on managing in the Premier League. I turned down opportunities to manage in the Premier League when I was Leeds manager because I felt I could get there with my boyhood club. And then I just felt that we finished 11th and it was always going to be a similar club that you would have to buy and have a develop, which I love doing, but this one opportunity to manage such a big club like Sunderland was probably too good to be true. And in hindsight, probably not the right, best decision I've ever made. But I don't have any regrets in going because you learn about yourself, you learn about what you need to do better in the future, but also some things are taken out of your hands. We took £50 million of sales in within that summer months and spent 1.2 million on 12 players. Well, that tells you that shouldn't happen to a relegated Premier League club with parachute payments. But the owner didn't want to put any more money in. Everything was about going out. Group, certain group of players that didn't want to be there. And it was very tough. And you lose your job very quickly. But the one thing that I look back on that period of time was that Chris Coleman, who replaced me, ex-Wales manager, couldn't repair any of it as well, and ultimately ended up getting relegated to League One, and it was just a difficult club at that period of time. But I don't regret going because if you can only have regrets about things you don't do, and that was my idea behind it.
Yeah, I mean, obviously a lot of people, including myself, Ian, I think as well, watched Sunderland Till I Die. Obviously, saw you on there and stuff like that. I think it's like you say about the sales and then the outgoings, so the players that and you could see watching it the constraints that you were working within to strengthen the squad. You know, you're buying free agents. There were players who were there as well, obviously Jack Rodwell, players who were there who were talented at big wages that didn't really care. And it, you know, it's kind of almost you go into a job and you're fighting a losing battle early days, and it's like you say, Chris Coleman came in and it was, you know, he struggled, and it, you know, they're still in League One now, and it's, I think it just kind of shows that it's, you know, Ellis Short, you know, obviously without kind of knowing too much about him, he kind of obviously he'd spent big money on the players in the Premier League and then he didn't want to spend any more money, and you can't do that and expect people to be successful. You know, obviously for you, you look at the previous manager spending that money and it's kind of like, you've got that money. The money's there, like you said, a parachute payment. And then it's like, right, okay, I don't want to spend anything now. You do this, you work your magic. So you think the kind of constraints financially and as well, when you've got a team that were going, you know, they were on a downer as well, must have been such a difficult job for you to do.
Yeah, I think, I knew there was going to be certain restraints on you as well and the money wasn't going to be there. But until you get in there, you back your ability as a manager and as a coach, that you'll get the best out of a group of players. One of my key strengths has been my management skills of players and thinking there's still some good players here. We can still be very competitive in the Championship. But I think also, if you're not going to get the money to spend, you've got to be given more time to work with players and implement ideas. And a lot of my success has been by being at clubs for long periods of time. Leeds 3.5 years, Preston 4.5, Blackpool 3.5 as well. So you want to build things, but you can't turn around a club that is full of negativity in one transfer window. You need two, probably three windows to be able to go and do that. And it was a tough place because there was a lot of negativity around from supporters. You'd play well for 10, 15 minutes and then one player would make a mistake and you go 1-0 down. It was like Groundhog Day. Mistake, fans get on the players' backs and it's very difficult to get out of that negativity from everybody, you know what I mean? I think the documentary showed that, that it wasn't an easy place to work there. But it's part and parcel of what I've done in my career, and I've learned from it, and you do whatever you need to do in the future.
I think with Sunderland, I'm sure Ian will agree. I think Aston Villa, when we got relegated, there was that. There's, as well with Sunderland, there's the expectation of bouncing back and bouncing straight back and getting to the Premier League. There's also the negativity. So there's always going to be players on big wages. You're going to sell players. Then you've got to rebuild. And so much has got to happen. And there's the expectations with the fans. And I think, obviously, we had Di Matteo and then Steve Bruce came in. I think Steve Bruce probably doesn't get the credit that he got in terms of just giving the club the stability. And obviously, he didn't get us up. We got up under Dean Smith, but we had that season on under him when he came in to give us that stability. And I think, like you say, you look at your past jobs, Blackpool and Preston, Huddersfield, coming in, getting the stability and then getting the promotion. And it's tough to get everything going almost immediately. So it's kind of, I think, like you say about the, you know, how the documentary showed it, the fans, everyone gets on your back. We've seen it so many times with Aston Villa. You play well, and that season we went down, there were so many games, particularly at the start of the season, we play well. You think, oh, okay, things seem to be clicking. And then you go behind, and then the crowd would, you know, they'd get on top of the players, and it would just kind of all crumble. And like you say, Groundhog Day, because it would happen time and time and time again. And it's just, it's one of those things, isn't it? It's, you know, obviously it happened, Steve Bruce got the time, whereas I think, you know, that you deserve that time with Sunderland because you've shown in your previous jobs, you build and then you build and then eventually you've been able to get that success. So obviously it's kind of a tough, it's disappointing to lose your job, but also at the same time, I think you dealt a tough hand, aren't you, ultimately?
Yeah, I think a lot of people in the game realise that it was a tough gig to take and didn't tell me that I was wrong in terms of taking the job. You just need opportunities. You want people to be patient with things, and proof has been that if you don't, then things can go horribly wrong, and that's what's happened. And no club has got a divine right once they're relegated to go straight back up. And we've seen even Leeds in League One, Nottingham Forest have been in League One, Man City have been down there. There's been some massive clubs that have gone through the divisions and then eventually have come back, and it's not easy, and time is something that as a manager you don't get now as much as you used to do. I've said this many times, that I wouldn't like to be a manager starting out now, because you don't just get the opportunities to lay the foundations, because you judge within half a dozen games. I think I won one or two in my first 10 games at Blackpool as a manager. If you have that record now, you are under pressure straight away, aren't you? You're under pressure. Never mind getting to 10, 5 or 6, you're under pressure now. So that just comes with the territory. And I think what you'll see is you'll see a lot more managers with less hair than I have.
that's the thing, isn't it, with the sort of technology these days and social media platforms. It's so easy for fans and sort of big, important people to put their opinions across on one or two games, rather than just giving that time, having a little bit of patience. I mean, we talk about that Sunderland and relating the Villa situation. We could have quite easily spiralled out of control the season we went down, and we could have quite easily gone down to League One just like Sunderland did, because the club was just so rotten from the inside out. And every decision we seem to make just turned to absolute sort of rubbish. Look at some of the signings we made and big money transfers, and they were like top goal scorers in the Championship the season before, and they just couldn't hit a barn door at Villa Park. So it's so easy. And like Chris said, Steve Bruce should get a lot of credit for that stabilising period. And then Dean Smith has come in and managed to take us to that next level. And hopefully we're going to build in the Premier League this season. And hopefully we can have a much better season and finish sort of mid-table-ish, and then try and build on that again and try and get back to the European nights when the fans are back in Villa Park. But we'll wait till then. We'll be patient.
Because when you're trying to rebuild a club, it's not necessarily the ones that you're trying to bring in. It's the ones that you want to get out of the club. And if you can't get players that are earning a fortune and not very good, at the same time, then you've got this real underlying problems. And that's where Steve obviously did a lot of the hard work and graft of getting players out and brought obviously players in off the back of it. And Dean has obviously done got his own ideas. He's brought his own philosophies in. He's got his own characteristics. And it's great to see Villa that are on the up. I think it was imperative that they didn't go down last year because if it had been the yo-yo club again, it's like, here we go again from a supporters perspective. So it was so vital that you try and, when you get promoted into the Premier League, that you try and stay in the Premier League that first season, then build again and build again. And hopefully now Villa, as you said, can keep building and building and somewhere back to where it once was again.
Yeah, exactly. It felt like a real watershed sort of moment that last day of the season, staying up at West Ham. And it was such a relief for a lot of fans because, like you say, we just didn't want to go back down because we know how hard it is to get out of that division. So staying up on the last day and just giving us that hope that we could now build. And we've had a really good summer transfer window. We've improved on the positions that need improved. And we brought in some real quality and there's some real promising players, the likes of Matty Cash, Martinez in goal, and then you look at Ollie Watkins up front and he looks like he's going to be a real star of the future and a future England player.
Yeah, definitely, and the ones that he kept as well, staying up meant that Jack Grealish stayed, didn't it? If he'd gone down, then Jack would have probably left, I'm pretty sure of it, and others would have left because they wouldn't want to be in the Championship. So it was so important for the club to stay up and got the money behind them, and they've still got people that have got the Villa connection at the club, as in not just Dean, but you've got Brian Little still there, Tails is there as ambassadors, and it's good to have that, see that connection between supporters and the football team of people, what it means to that football club.
Just before we finish, there's three questions I wanted to ask you, but also just wanted to kind of touch on your son and obviously how he's getting on at Blackburn Rovers. Is it Joe?
Yeah.
So I presume he's been there since a young age.
Yeah, he was, because when obviously moved up here, we lived around this area, and he's been at the academy since he was 6 or 7. Made his debut, 2 years ago. And it's the most nervous I've ever been watching a game, because as a manager, as a player, you can control things, you can make decisions. But you're sat in the director's box watching him, you're thinking, right, just make a good pass, don't give a goal away and stuff like that. And then he went on loan to Grimsby, and then this time last year he had a bad injury. He was training and did his hamstring like Harry Kane, and he just got back to fitness in the last month now, so he played his first 90 minutes last week. So he's in a good place, he's worked hard, and he's just waiting for an opportunity, whether it's to go back out on loan or be around Blackburn's first team. But he's got a lot more ability than his dad. He's got a left foot to die for, and I don't know where he gets that from, because he can hit. He's got a range of passing of 60-yard passes that he's so cultured, and where I couldn't even run that far, never mind pass the ball that far. But he can't tackle like his dad, so he needs to put that into his game as well.
Yeah, definitely. But you've got to have a few sessions with him, make sure he adds that to his game, and where he's up then, isn't it?
Yeah. Hopefully he met as a career.
Yeah, no, it's... Yeah, I think, in all fairness, Blackburn... I think, you know, they're building a decent side there, in all fairness. And I think, it's kind of a good club to be at, because there's no kind of expectations as a club, either from, you know, the media or the fans. I've always had a soft spot for Blackburn over the years. And I think at the moment they are building a decent team and they're kind of sitting quite nicely in the Championship. So, you know, I think, obviously be exciting for him to be part of.
Yeah, like we were only the third father and son to play for Blackburn. So that was part of history as well when that happened last year.
Yeah. Who were the other two? Do you know?
I haven't got a clue. They were going back 80-odd years. So it hasn't been frequently. So I'm not sure.
I should have looked that up. I'll look it up at some point. So just before we finish, just want to ask you three questions. Which is going to be the best player that you've played with, the best manager you've played under, and then the best player that you've managed.
Right the way through my career, or are you talking Aston Villa?
No, just whole career.
Whole career.
Whole career. Hardest, best player to play with. It's a tough one, this, because you, when you play sort of for Leicester in the Premier League and Aston Villa, you're playing with different types of players and some skillful. Steve Walsh is obviously one of my close friends. He was always a joy to play with because he would run through a brick wall. He was great in the box. He'd look after you on the pitch. He'd smash people in the tunnel at half times and stuff like that. Yorkie, obviously, on a technical basis, was a fantastic player, wasn't he? I always remember when we had to beat Arsenal last game of the season to qualify for Europe and we got the penalty and he chipped Seaman, didn't he? And how many people would have done that? What was riding on the game? So I think Yorkie was up there with a great, with his ability. Somebody who played for both the clubs who probably a little bit so underrated from my perspective was Gary Parker. Parks was a great passer of the ball and I really liked working with Parks at Leicester. And obviously being at Villa in the first place. So playing again, when you play in the Premier League, and I was versatile, you could play against Patrick Vieira one week, Roy Keane the following week, or you play fullback at Leicester, and you're playing against Giggs and then Sharp. I remember playing for Leicester with 4-0 down and Giggs went off and I'm thinking, oh, happy days. And then they bring Lee Sharp on. I'm thinking, oh, how good is that then? Brilliant. So that's a difficult one to answer. And in terms of players that have managed, again, Jermaine Beckford done a lot for me in terms of scored the winner in the to get promoted, scored at Old Trafford, scored a hat-trick for Preston, scored goals for Huddersfield. So Jermaine would be up there, but Snodgrass was a fantastic player at Leeds. I loved him and I tried to sign him when he came on loan to Villa, yeah, because he came with John Terry, didn't he? And I was at Sunderland and he said, look, I would come to you, but you're about 200 miles further north and I'm living in London, so I can travel up most days. So Snodgrass was a fantastic talent as well. Managers as well, that I love working under Brian Little, but I did like Martin O'Neill in his quirky ways and his manners. And so again, the Leicester and Villa connection is very close because there's been a lot of players that have played for both clubs over the years as well and managed as well.
Yeah. Amazing. I mean, I think it's one of them, isn't it? When you've had such a good career that you've had as a player and managerially, you know, it's a tough one to pick someone, isn't it? One player I just want to ask you about, because I mean, he's not a Villa player, but as when I was younger, I was a really real big fan of Matt Janssen.
Yeah,
what was he like? You know, to play with, because obviously there was a time when he was, I think he got called up to the England squad and then he had a bad bike accident, but he seemed to have a hell of a lot of talent, and particularly obviously as a striker, a great finish on him.
Yeah, he was a real talented player, was Matty. He needed another ball in the team because he'd just keep that one to himself more times than not, you know what I mean? You'd be in a good position and he'd just try and do something out the unordinary. So but he had a fantastic ability. I think when Carlisle had a chance, I think at one stage, did he go to Man United? Or he was close to going to Man United and went to Palace. But I think the bike incident really affected his career, his confidence and his balance, which he never fulfilled his full ambition. So yeah, Matty was certainly a player that could excite people. And I think in the modern day today, he would be a real good entertainer, very much in the Jack Grealish mode, wasn't he?
Yeah, I loved watching him. He just seemed to have, you know, he could just create a chance out of nothing. Scored all types of goals, and even, you know, as a neutral fan, you know, watching, if I ever watched the Blackburn games, always wanted him to do well. And obviously, getting into the England side was good. But yeah, obviously, looking back at your career, I noticed that you played with him. So yeah, I just thought I'd ask you about him. He was, you know, top player. But yeah, massive, massive thank you for taking the time to talk to us. Really, really appreciated. Is there anything else you want to ask Ian?
Yeah, I suppose before we go, it'd only be fair if we ask Simon what his sort of aspirations are moving forward. Is he openly looking for opportunities to get back in the game?
Yeah, look, I'm ready to go back to work. I went back to Blackpool last summer and again, you talk about time. I got told by the owner there that we wanted to build a club again, and you overachieve your first 6 months of the season, and all of a sudden you lose a couple of games and you're not given the time to do what somebody told you they wanted to do. So you leave there. But I'm 50, I'm just short of 700 games, I've got 4 promotions, I want to keep adding to all them. I've got the hunger, desire, I love coaching, I love working with players, and it gives you great satisfaction when you see people like Callum and DJ from Villa and Jordan Ugel go on to have great careers, and other players that you've developed and seen an eye for. So yeah, I've got that. I've maybe gotten looking at maybe working abroad potentially, and see something different. There's a whole new world out there with football, isn't there, to go to different countries, different continents or wherever. I've not travelled too far because I've managed in Yorkshire and Lancashire most of my career, so people don't think of that. I can venture too far down south, you know what I mean, or even never mind out of the country. So, of course, I want to go back to work, and I still think I've got a lot to give to football.
Yeah, definitely.
Definitely. We'll wish you the best of luck with whatever comes next, and I'm sure you'll do a great job.
No worries, thanks.
Nice one. Well, thank you very much, Simon. We'll look at trying to get something sorted that might be golf in Dubai, but I'll have to.
Yeah. No, great to speak to you. I really appreciate that.
Chris might have to hope our numbers come up on the lottery.
Yeah, definitely. I'll get a few more lines. See what happens.
Fine. I'll just a beer at the Belfry will be fine.
Lovely. We'll get that sorted. All right.